This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The death toll from China's coronavirus has surpassed 900. VOA's Marissa Melton.
The death toll on mainland China from the coronavirus outbreak has now passed 900. China's National Health Commission reported another 97 deaths on Sunday, along with 3,062 new cases, coming after a drop in the number of reported cases on Saturday, and that was the first drop in more than a week. Meanwhile, Britain confirmed its fourth case of coronavirus and Spain its second, with both cases acquired by people who had recently made trips to France. Millions of people remain under lockdown in Hubei, the landlocked province at the center of the coronavirus outbreak, where residents are complaining of food shortages. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thailand authorities now say the death toll has risen to 29 after a soldier, angry over a property deal, started a shooting rampage in northeastern Thailand before being shot dead Sunday morning. We get more from Reuters' David Doyle.
Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha said on Sunday that the soldier, named as Jakrapan Toma, was angry over a house deal involving a relative of his commanding officer. That officer was killed by Jakrapant, officials said, before he stole a Humvee, assault weapon and ammunition and drove to a shopping mall in the northeastern city of Nakhon Ratchasima. During a 12-hour standoff, hundreds of shoppers fled the mall as the police and army launched several rescues. Hours before he began shooting on Saturday, Jakrapant posted on Facebook denouncing greedy people. He continued to post written updates during the attack until Facebook shut down his account. The army said Jakrapant was a sharp shooter who had taken many special courses, including on planned ambushes.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization reports progress is being made in combating the Ebola epidemic in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The latest number of reported cases stands at 3,429, with the mortality rate of about 66%. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The global fixation on the evolution of the novel coronavirus has knocked the DRC's Ebola epidemic out of the media spotlight. However, health officials working in the shadows have been making steady progress in slowing the transmission of this deadly virus. WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, tells VOA the situation in the country is very different now than it was a few months ago. This Ebola outbreak has been going on since August 2018. It is the 10th to hit the DRC since 1976 and the second largest ever recorded after the 2014 Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee says the Justice Department has established a way to review information gathered in Ukraine by President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani has targeted Democrat Joe Biden and his son. A department spokeswoman is declining to comment when asked about the statements by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. Giuliani himself is under scrutiny by federal authorities, and that means the Justice Department would be putting itself in the awkward position of appearing to work with someone it is actively investigating to gather potentially damaging information against one of the president's political rivals. Mr. Trump's budget to face skepticism is being overwhelming in politics. The president is preparing a $4.8 trillion budget plan that rehashes previously rejected spending cuts while leaving Social Security and Medicare benefits untouched. The president's fiscal 2021 budget plan, to be released on Monday, seeks to wrestle trillion-dollar-plus deficits into balance after 15 years. It is not likely to generate a serious Washington dialogue about what to do, if anything, this election year, about entrenched fiscal problems that have deficits surging despite a healthy economy. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said that once again, the president is showing just how little he values the good health and financial security and well-being of hardworking Americans. It is part of the back and forth between the House Speaker and the president. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, February 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A member of Cameroon's opposition party says Sunday's parliamentary and municipal elections were fraudulent in the English-speaking regions.
The elections were marked by a series of rigging all over my constituency. In Moluka, the Elecam refused to accept my polling agent, and I didn't have any polling agent in any of the polling stations in Moluka.
We'll have a report from Yaoundé about Sunday's voting. A separatist spokesperson says report a poor showing in Sunday's voting in English-speaking regions was a victory. Malawi's vice president has been speaking about conditions for an alliance in coming elections, and Uganda deploys the army to fight locust invasion.
Around three, our teams of Minister of Agriculture and UPDF got the site and confirmed that it was true. Some small farms of the locusts, desert locusts, are close to Uganda in the district of Amadat.
Agre Bajire is Uganda's Minister of State for Agriculture, and thousands of Kenyans have been viewing the body of former President Daniel Arap Moi. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroonians voted successfully on Sunday in local and parliamentary elections in French-speaking areas of the country, but voting was slow going in the English-speaking zones, where separatist fighters warned residents not to vote. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon President Paul Biya encouraged and congratulated those who voted.
Hundreds of voters lined up at the polling station at government bilingual primary school Bastos in the Cameroon capital Yaoundé to vote in the Central African nation's local and parliamentary elections. Among those who voted in the early hours of the morning was Cameroon President Paul Biya. He says Cameroonians should come out massively and vote and should not listen to people he describes as detractors of his country's democracy.
D'abord, un sentiment de joie, de satisfaction. J'ai accompli mon devoir de citoyen et j'en suis heureux.
He says he's very delighted and satisfied to have performed his civic responsibility and that he is calling on all citizens to ignore calls from some political parties to boycott the polls. He says as far as he is concerned, the elections indicate that democracy is progressing and is now inevitable in Cameroon. Biya was reacting to some political parties like the Cameroon People's Party that had been calling for the cancellation of the elections in favor of a transition which will put an end to his regime. The Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party was also leading protests for the elections to be cancelled. Separatist fighters have vowed that the elections will not take place in the two English-speaking regions of the country and imposed a travel ban in Cameroon's northwest and southwest. Emmanuel Acha, a 54-year-old English teacher who escaped from his northwestern village of Bafut, says he voted because he believes the Cameroon parliament needs committed people who can solve the separatist crisis in the English-speaking regions.
I am particularly pleased to have accomplished my civic duty. This is the greatest weapon for peace and development, the greatest weapon to bring back normalcy.
As many rushed to vote in the French-speaking regions, the turnout in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions was very poor, as many people were either scared of separatist threats or heeded calls on them not to vote. Deben Chofor, governor of the English-speaking regions, pleaded with voters to conquer fear and assured the population of their safety.
I'm appealing to all the citizens of Northwest region to go to the polling station to vote for our municipal councillors, for our parliamentarians. Those are the key persons that are going to implement the special status agreed upon after the major national dialogue. I'm also asking everybody, mainly the youth of the Northwest region, to come out massively to vote.
The special status Governor Deben Chofor was referring to creates assemblies of chiefs, regional assemblies and regional councils for the two English-speaking regions, with each of them having elected presidents. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A member of Cameroon's opposition Social Democratic Front Party says Sunday's parliamentary and municipal elections were marred by rigging in the English-speaking regions. Fritz Itoke is a SDF member of parliament.
The elections were marked by a series of rigging all over my constituency. I am from Moyuka, Tiko Aninde. In Moyuka, the election refused to accept my polling agents. And even the polling agents were available, some of the polling agents that were supposed to change, they refused. And I didn't have any polling agents in any of the polling stations in Moyuka. We have 80 polling stations. As usual, the many people that were deployed, they voted severally, and I know the result is going to be catastrophic in Moyuka. The same thing is obtained in Tiko and Limbe. In Limbe, we caught one lady who is working with Sonara and is in the counting list for CPGM for Limbe 1. With about 500 envelopes already having a CPGM ballot papers, she went to the Mangawilian Avenue grandstand to stop the ballot boxes there, and she was caught by my police agent and my district chair. The video is there, and the SDO had to come. Unfortunately, she was supposed to be locked up as they have been doing to others, but I saw her roaming around and they continued activities. In my form, a member of the elite for Linda 1, who happens to be the director of the public law school, was giving people money for them to vote for CPGM.
So, Fritz, let me ask you, there has been insurrection in the English-speaking regions where you are, and the separatists have said they did not want any election to take place. What motivated the SDF, the Social Democratic Front Party, to take part? Is this what you were expecting?
We decided to go in for election because we want Cameroon, the institutions, to continue functioning. But it's unfortunate that our electoral system is by this CPGM gang, and we pray the international community has to do something because the elections were not free and fair all over the Northwest and Southwest. I've spoken with my colleagues. The many people have voted about 10 times, 20 times. The elections is not credible.
The separatists, as I mentioned, have been fighting for an independent English-speaking region, which they call Ambazonia. By taking part in this election, do you agree with them or you have an alternative to the crisis in the speaking region?
I can never be for election boycott. I am against it. I know I am for Cameroon, the one and indivisible Cameroon. What we want is that things are not moving well. We need to change so many things in the country. That's why I started going for the election. Unfortunately, the election has been rigged all over, South, Northwest, and Southwest.
What are you all going to do, the SDF? What are you going to do?
Well, we know what to do. We'll have an extraordinary meeting, and we'll have to speak and decide what to do next.
Fritz Itoke is a member of parliament for Cameroon's opposition Social Democratic Front Party. He was speaking with us from the town of Tiko in the Southwest region. Separatists are claiming victory in Sunday's parliamentary and municipal elections in Cameroon due to reported poor showing at polling stations in the country's English-speaking regions. Spokesperson Chris Anu says people in the English-speaking regions responded to the lockdown imposed in the Northwest and Southwest English-speaking regions to prevent the elections from taking place there.
If you have been researching or investigating what went on, you would have realized Ambazonia was completely locked down. We declared a referendum on whether living without a Prince of Cameroon or not. And Ambazonians declared living without a Prince of Cameroon is over by this election.
But yet there were elections held in English-speaking region.
Well, I don't know whether you have watched or seen footages and pictures coming out from Ambazonia. This day of that election, I can assure you we have never seen a lockdown of Ambazonia as effective as the one that we had ongoing. And because of that, Ambazonians were sending a message to the international community that never again do they consider themselves Cameroonians or part of Cameroon.
There were city chiefs that were being elected in this election, and some say this was one of the concessions made by the Paul Biya government.
As far as we know, there hasn't been any concession. We're not looking for a concession. We are looking for a free Federal Republic of Ambazonia. A concession means absolutely nothing to us. Even if his idea should come out tomorrow after realizing that we left his country, if he should come out tomorrow and say, let's go back to 1961, where we were a state and they were a state, we will say that is not what we want. We want a free and independent Southern Cameroon. And so no measure, no concession, is going to satisfy us until we have permanently raised our flag in our capital in Boya.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston. Today's Monday, February 10th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Malawi's reinstated Vice President Saulos Chilima has been speaking about conditions that he says must be met in order for his United Transformation Movement, or the UTM party, to enter into any political alliance. Ever since the Malawi Constitutional Court nullified the results of the May 21, 2019 presidential election and reinstated Mr. Chilima, analysts have been speculating that Chilima could enter into an alliance with main opposition leader Lazarus Chakwera. Joseph Chidante Malunga is a spokesperson of the United Transformation Movement of Vice President Saulos Chilima.
In his press briefing, basically what he meant was that if we go into an alliance with any other political party and we start sharing about the positions, who's going to be number one, who's going to be number two, and then talk about the last, then we're going to miss the point. I think what we should do is, if there's going to be an alliance, it has to be an alliance that is good for the people, not put positions as a prerequisite to the alliance, then it is going to be a threat. So basically what he's trying to say is that let's forget about everything else that probably people might be thinking and put the interests of the country first.
If you look back on the 2019 election, I mean, people have been speculating that in order for the opposition to have a chance, you know, you have Chakwera, who came second in the last election. Is it possible that the former VP can join with Mr. Chakwera?
First of all, we don't believe the results of the last election. That's why he went to court, and the court has nullified it. So we don't want to make reference to that because we don't believe it was a true reflection of what Malawians did on 2019. Now, going to the second part of the question, is the vice president ready to go to Chakwera? Well, he has made it very clear that, first of all, we should not be talking about are we ready to go to that person. When Malawians have spoken about what they want, I think all these things about the permutations, about where to go and who is going to be what, as UTM, we can talk to anyone. And our president said that we can talk to any other and listen and judge whether whatever they're telling us is in the interest of Malawians. I think the question of who should not matter in this case, but what matters is what is it that Malawians want. Once we establish what Malawians want, then it is going to be, and we'll follow that.
As you know, President Peter Mutharika has appealed the judgment of the Constitutional Court. You all have any idea when this will be resolved?
We don't have any idea when this is going to be resolved, but I think they have made two applications. One is the appeal. The other one is the stay order, you know, to set aside the judgment that was given by the lower court. And the hearing for the stay is going to be on Tuesday. But about the actual appeal, we don't know when it is going to be resolved.
Joseph Chidante Malunga is the spokesperson of the United Transformation Movement Party of Malawian Vice President Saulos Chilima. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Uganda has confirmed swarms of plant-eating locusts have invaded the country. Agre Bajire, Uganda's Minister of Agriculture, says the government is deploying a team, including the army, in the affected areas to help fight the locust invasion. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
Agure Bajire, Uganda's Minister of State for Agriculture, confirmed this Sunday evening that the swarms of desert locusts had crossed Uganda into the eastern part of the country, bordering with Kenya.
Around three, our teams of Minister of Agriculture and UPDF got the site and confirmed that it was true. Some small swarms of the locusts, desert locusts, had crossed to Uganda in the district of Amadat. And the current status is that late in the evening, some of the swarms started going on another journey downwards the district of Nabiratok and Nakapipit. We don't know what it will be like in the morning, but that's the status.
Locust swarms migrate with the wind and can cover 100 to 150 kilometers in a day, according to regional body, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. Record desert locusts have ravaged hundreds of acres of crops in neighboring Kenya for the last past weeks. Outbreaks have also been reported in Ethiopia and Somalia. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, has called it East Africa's worst desert locust invasion in 25 years. Billions of locusts have destroyed tens of thousands of acres of plants in Kenya. Ruhakana Rugunda, Uganda's prime minister, told journalists yesterday, Sunday afternoon, that Uganda is working with Kenya to control the locusts.
When Kenya was fighting this invasion, it was also helping Uganda and helping the region to deal with it. We have had an interministerial meeting, and in fact committee, and also a technical interministerial committee to deal with this situation. Uganda has already paid the $3 million that is part of our contribution to the desert locust control.
According to UN FAO, an average swarm of locusts could destroy the same number of food crops in a day, enough to feed 2,500 people. Eastern Uganda is one region that has been famine-prone for years. Minister Bajile says the government is ready to battle the locusts.
We have pumps, both manual and motorized, that we shall be dispatching, that the people on the ground, led by the soldiers, the UPDF soldiers, can start the spraying.
He also says the government will hire specialized aeroplanes to spray the locusts. The United Nations has warned the locust outbreak could cause food shortages and has appealed for some $76 million US to fight the invading locusts. The UN also warns that, unless controlled, the locusts could also spread to South Sudan, Eritrea, and Djibouti. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Thousands of Kenyans, including political leaders and diplomats, have been viewing the body of former President Daniel Arap Moi as it laid in state at the Parliament building. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, President Moi will be giving a state burial in his rural hometown on Wednesday.
Fimbo ya Nyayo is a Swahili word meaning a stick that lead the footsteps. President Daniel Moi walked around with a stick whenever he addressed the public. Early Tuesday morning, 4th of February 2020, Kenyans woke up to the sad news of passing on of the retired President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi. Leading Kenyans in viewing the body of the late President Moi, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has eulogized Mr. Moi as a leader who led Kenya to prosperity after taking over power in 1978.
Proceeds through the streets of our nation's capital to lie in state at Parliament buildings, we commence the final journey of a great son of Kenya. Fellow Kenyans, the question that we should all ask ourselves is, how does one mourn an iconic leader? A leader who spent almost his entire life in the service of our nation, of a man whose calm and steady hand reassured a young nation and her allies during the peaceful transition into the second administration.
The late President Moi took power after the death of Mzee Jomo Kenyatta in August 1978, leading Kenya for 24 years before retiring in the year 2002. President Kenyatta says Kenya will live to remember the late Moi's legacy.
President Moi was a mortal man whose works and legacy will remain immortal. The Republic of Kenya, the community of East Africa, and the great continent of Africa bears his indelible mark, which I am convinced will endure long into the future. May Mzee Moi's memory live as long as our republic endures, and may we, to whom he has left the care of the republic, prove ourselves worthy of his bequest.
Ministers, members of parliament, as well as journalists who worked under the late president's regime, shared their encounters. Former Vice President Musalia Mudavadi, who by then deputized the late President Moi for the shortest period of only 6 months, said that Moi was a man that always kept his word.
A political career spanning maybe almost 5 decades. So we just say that to honor him, let us start having some internal self-dialogue as a nation and see how we can move forward for a better future.
The late Moi died at the age of 95. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Kenyans have a public holiday to attend a requiem mass that will take place at Nyayo Stadium in Nairobi before his body leaves for his rural home in Kabarak for the burial on Wednesday 12th. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with basketball news, where Nigeria's female national basketball team, the Tigress, on Saturday booked a ticket to the 2020 Olympics game in Tokyo, despite losing to host Serbia in their second group game at the ongoing FIBA Olympic Games qualifying tournament, 64 to 70 points. On Sunday night, the Nigerian ladies narrowly lost to the USA, 71 to 76. The Nigerian side had won the first two quarters, 21 to 20 points and 19 to 16 points, and were ahead in the game, 57 to 50 points at the end of the third quarter. Nigeria's Ezinne was the top performer as she churned out 17 points, 4 rebounds and 8 assists in the defeat.
I'm so happy. This experience for myself and my teammates and the coaching staff is just something amazing. We've definitely worked for this. We definitely worked so hard. This loss today even feels like a win for us, because it took so much for us to get here, the World Cup, AfroBasket, the tournament in Mozambique, and then coming here again to Serbia to play. It's just an unbelievable experience, and I'm pretty sure with months of advance of training and preparation, you're definitely going to see a new team in Tokyo, and I just can't wait. I'm super excited for our girls.
In athletics news, Kenya's David Barsami Tumo won the 42 kilometers event of the 2020 Lagos City Marathon, which ended at the weekend in Lagos. In the men's category, David Tumo broke the marathon's record and finished first in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 23 seconds. Debeko Dakumu and Paul Chege, however, came second and third in that order. David Tumo was excited to go home with a star prize of $50,000.
I just started from way back in Kenya by training, giving more energy to sport. When during training, I was very much serious on the training.
In the female category, Sharon Jamutai won the race in 2 hours, 31 minutes, 40 seconds, and was rewarded with a sum of $50,000 for her efforts.
From the beginning, I asked God for the victory, and I thank God because of the victory I met it.
Morocco successfully defended the title they won 4 years back with a well-worked 5-0 victory over Egypt in the CAF Afghan Futsal Tournament, which took place in Morocco. While the struggle to beat the Egyptians 3-2 during the last edition in 2016 in South Africa, this time the Atlas Lions were flawless and more destructive, thus stopping Egypt's hunt for a historical fourth piece of silverware. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Cameroonians voted successfully on Sunday in local and parliamentary elections in French-speaking areas of the country, but voting was slow going in the English-speaking zones, where separatist fighters warned residents not to vote. And that is it for this Monday, February 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Hi, this is Larry London inviting you to join me on February 14th for Border Crossings Presents Urban Chart Legends. Some of the biggest names in urban music, jazz, R&B, hip-hop. It's all on one program on one day, February 14th. Michael Jackson, Kendrick Lamar, James Brown, and many more. Tune us in starting at 1500 Universal right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, protection, patronage, or plunder? A new book examines how colonialism influenced the development of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.